These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission:
to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
Hey, Doc, this is it.
Never mind that.
Why, that's me. Look at me. I'm an old man.
Hey, I'm Dr. Emmett Brown. I'm standing here on the parking lot.
Thank God, I still got my hair. What on earth is this thing I'm wearing?
Wow, this is a radiation suit.
Radiation suit? Of course. Because of all the fallout from the atomic wars. This. It's truly amazing. A portable television studio. No wonder your president has to be an actor. He's got to look good on television.
Whoa, this is it. This is the part coming up, Doc.
No. This sucker's electrical. But I need a nuclear reaction to generate the 1.21 gigawatts of electricity.
What did I just say?
Flux capacitor storage. This sucker's electrical. But I need a nuclear reaction to generate the 1.21 gigawatts of electricity.
1.21 gigawatts! 1.21 gigawatts! Great Scott! What the hell is a gigawatt? How could I have been so careless? 1.21 gigawatts! Tom, how am I going to generate that kind of power? It can't be done, can it?
But all we need is a little plutonium.
Oh, I'm sure that in 1985, plutonium was available in every corner drugstore, but in 1955, it's a little hard to come by. Marty, I'm sorry, but I'm afraid you're stuck here.
Whoa, Doc, stuck here? I can't be stuck here. I got a wife in 1985. I got a girl.
Is she pretty?
Why, she's beautiful. She's crazy about me. Look at this. Look what you wrote here, Doc. I mean, that says it all. Doc, my only hope.
Marty, I'm sorry, but the only power source capable of generating 1.21 gigawatts of electricity is a bolt of lightning.
What did you say?
A bolt of lightning. Unfortunately, you never know when or where it's ever going to strike.
We do now.
This is it. This is the answer. It says here that a bolt of lightning is going to strike the clock tower precisely 10:04 p.m. next Saturday night. If we could somehow harness this lightning, channel it into the flux capacitor, it just might work. Next Saturday night, we're sending you back to the future.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0, blast off!
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
Everybody, you're listening to Mad Science at www.shazizradio.com. If you want to join in on the chat, jump over there to the superchat.html where you have not access to not only one but four separate chat rooms. And one of our people that come here often, to one of our regular friends out here, Stephen Gibbons, had done something really cool for everybody. There is now, if you scroll up above the radio player, you will find Stephen's resource page. And if you click on that resource page, he has compiled a very, very long list of all kinds of researchers, alternative energy researcher groups, and so much more on this page. And so, if you're really into alternative energy research and you want to see what people are up to and all kinds of things that are available through history and everything like that, well, this is the page for you here on ShazizRadio.com. And if you have the opportunity to share this resource page link with somebody else, please do so out there on your social media networks and so on. There's just an incredibly long list. Steven's been working really hard, and I've got to thank him for that. That is just amazing. And I'm glad we finally get to, we talked about it on a few shows. We're getting ready to put it out there. And here it is, folks. The resource page is out there for you. And thank everybody. Throw a link in there or a message in there. Tell Steven thank you very much for his efforts. Because this takes a lot of work, folks. Going out there finding all this different things that are related to alternative energy and such. And so, you know, it's really appreciated. And this is what we do here at ShazizRadio.com. We have some wonderful people that show up in the chat room. Oh, man. Excuse me. Let me take a drink of my coffee. So we have a lot of people that show up here, you know, on the radio shows and in the chat rooms that there's so much more that goes on behind the scenes that, you know, you don't just hear a radio show. There's other things like trying to work through technical difficulties and such and trying to put some good information out there for you. Sorry, it's like winter time. It's dry air in here. I'm trying to get my act together. Ooh. And so anyway, check out the resource page. Compliments of Stephen Gibbons, a wonderful person. He does a lot of good stuff out here, posts a lot of links in there. And if you get in the chat rooms and you want to see what went on last week, you can go up to scroll up to the top up there. And there's a link at the top of the chat room that says, let's see if I can find it there. Oh, was there? Maybe I didn't scroll up far enough. Anyway, if you take that little bar and you scroll up at the top, there's a deal that says previous 35. That'll bring you to the 35 previous comments on that particular page. There's four separate chat rooms, so you can go back and look and see what was been going on last week or whatever. Links that were you heard in a podcast that you hadn't been able to track down or whatever, they're in there. So... So anyway, the resource page is up for everybody. Got a lot more stuff on the way. And I posted a couple links inside the actual chat room itself of some videos about transformers and losses in transformers and such. Energy losses in transformers. It's like three separate videos. But the one video that I posted down at the bottom, it was a homemade transformer that somebody was pulsing with a transistor or a MOSFET. You can do it either way, it just depends on how you wired it up. But basically, the reason why I posted that last video down on there is because he's basically made a high frequency coil using some ferrite cores. And I'll get into ferrite and all that here in a minute, but basically he's only got about, I don't know, 6 to 10 turns around the deal, which would be the primary coil, and he's pulsing that, and then he wraps one single wire around the other side, and he shows that you can get a lot of current out the other side. Now see, there's a difference between voltage and current to the extent is a lot of the things that you need out there, you need a lot of current in order to be able to get them to run because of the way they were designed, pretty inefficient. But nonetheless, you see whenever he connects these two wires that they actually really seriously get hot. Alright, and there's some arcing going across there. And he actually got one part in there where he's watching this video and he's got the wire twisted together and you can see it get red hot and smoke and burn. So, this little deal's almost working like an induction heater. But anyway, there's so much I'm trying to get to in what I'm trying to say here about no losses. If you go, so I'm going to just go ahead and backtrack then. If you go and actually look at Transformers, and you really pay attention to what's going on in Transformers, when we got high voltage power coming down the power line to our house, they got to have a way to step that voltage down, because your house and your appliances won't run on that type of high frequency, high voltage. And so that's where Transformers come into play. Majority of all the energy loss that we have as far as our electrical grid, it has to do with Transformers. Now, from the power company deal, they have developed a system to where the Transformers that are on the pole basically are a combination of capacitors and step-down Transformers. So they'll take that high frequency, high voltage and step it down, but they're also storing a bit of it. And that was one of the key ingredients in what it is that I'm trying to talk about, because when you're running your appliances directly off the wall, the energy's already got enough current and it's got enough amperage and wattage and whatever to basically run these inefficiently designed equipment that we run. But in the process of trying to be able to be super efficient, I started looking into all kinds of different circuits. You know, different ways to get a magnetic field created in a primary. Now, that transformer core, it doesn't care where that magnetic field comes from. It doesn't care at all. And you gotta finally develop some sort of understanding of what is actually occurring when you're pulling that power from the wall into your appliances and such. Why it is that you use so much electricity. Well, if you study transformers and how they actually work, they're not designed very well. There's a lot of different materials out there that you can use that would help to reduce losses and stuff like that. And essentially, when they talk about like a shell core transformer, that means it's got covered around in metal so that the entire magnetic flux is contained inside the core there. Basically, when you got a transformer with a primary coil on there, and you put your input voltage on the primary coil, it creates a magnetic field around that coil. Now, that magnetic field that we call flux is what actually sends the magnetic field out to the secondary that's not directly connected or not directly coupled. And the more of that flux that you can actually get to cross through the secondary, the more electrical current you can generate in that secondary. And so if you didn't have no iron core or ferrite core in between there, then you wouldn't get as much flux from the secondary, or from the primary to the secondary, that you would get otherwise. See, what's happening is when you pulse that primary coil, the magnetic field expands, and you need a way that you can guide that magnetic field around to the secondary so that the windings in the secondary can react to the changing magnetic field, the changing of the polarity back and forth, you know, like DC current's one direction, right? And AC current is like back and forth, both directions. And when those fields are changing from north to south, that's what actually causes the electrical flow in your wire. So you need a way to get as much of that magnetic flux to transfer through that iron core or ferrite core to the other side over there in order to be able to generate the most amount of energy. Most of the transformers that we use in our house our step down transformers, because we want to step it down from either 120 or 220 down to, you know, anywhere from 18 to, you know, 9 volts or whatever, even all the way down to like what if it's in your USB port, which is about 5 volts, because your smaller electronics can't run on that higher voltages and that higher current. And so we have to be able to bring that voltage down. But in the process of doing that, through that transformer, you have losses. You have energy losses. When the magnetic field's being created and the field's changing back and forth from north to south, you generate what's known as eddy currents. If you just visualize it like a little pool, it's like a little whirlpools in a swimming pool, you know. Those are from the changing field and causing little currents in the metal core that are actually producing heat. And so heat is one of the losses. Plus, that magnetic field, there's no way, we don't have really a lot of materials that will shield a magnetic field. And so some of the magnetic field actually just goes out into the air. So whenever you're transferring that energy from one place to the next through a transformer, you lose a little bit of that energy as far as magnetic flux and the magnetic field going out and just out into the air. And so with the proper type of transformer, like a circular toroidal ferrite core, you can get more of that flux to go around to the secondary. But nonetheless, even with that particular style core, you still get losses. Just there may be small losses, but they're enough to where you can't get out a really good efficiency on the other side. And by generating heat in the cores, that's another way of losing. And so there are a couple different ways to lose energy, probably 3 or 4 different ways to lose energy in the transformer cores themselves. And so this is the time when the free thinkers of the world and alternative energy researchers come together and start to design the perfect core to ensure that you get no losses in the system. We know that we're losing magnetic field out the side of it because, the field's a little bit stronger than, the actual shape of the core, or actually the way that the coils are put in there, that you're not getting the maximum amount of flux across to the secondary. One of the ways they fixed a little bit of this was that they started winding the secondary coil right on top of the primary coil. And so with that said, then now you know there's at least one way to start making these things more efficient. For example, you need to study exactly how that magnetic field expands and collapses. You need to study whatever transformer you got. Somehow, you know, we got magnet paper where you can actually lay a magnet paper over tops of electromagnets or permanent magnets, and you can actually visualize where the actual magnetic field is. You can see how when you got a coil that is going through metal or metal shavings, or even using the magnet paper, there's a toroidal effect going on from north to south. It's going around, you know, in a certain direction from north to south, and you can actually see the full size of the magnetic field that is surrounding that. And so common sense would dictate, if you want to get the maximum amount of efficiency out of this and not waste any of that magnetic flux, you need to design your primary and your secondary right within that field. You need to design your core so that your core doesn't extend past that field, so that whenever you pulse your primary, the magnetic flux goes through the complete every single bit of the secondary windings. And so with that, you get a better efficiency. And since you know that unless you get the perfect materials that are capable of magnetizing and demagnetizing rapidly, then you're always going to have eddy currents. If you have a material that is able to magnetize and demagnetize really rapidly without producing eddy currents, then you won't have the heat losses that you would have normally got in your standard transformer. So, if we could re-engineer a transformer within that magnetic field that we already know exists, no further, no less, just find the exact measurement. When you put this much power to this primary, it's going to produce a magnetic field, let's just say hypothetically, 8 inches in diameter. And so you've got this magnetic field that's 8 inches in diameter, and if you understand how magnets magnetic flux travels in waves, then you know exactly where you want your secondary to be. So now you've got a perfectly efficiently wound core. Now, if for example that you're still going to have to use laminated metal, which is another thing I forgot to mention, was if you had a solid iron core, you essentially produce an electromagnet, but you also produce a lot of eddy currents there. And the way that they got around that was making multi-layer laminated plates to make the core out of, so that would reduce the temperature in there, the eddy currents that was developed inside there. It wasn't a solid block anymore. It's basically a cooler way to do it. The next way they got to reduce those eddy currents was to go to a kind of a ceramic and ferrous material mixed in together, which they call ferrite. And you can get like black sand, which is essentially what it is ferrite. And you can build your own cores using different types of materials. But because of the way that was not a solid, and it was kind of like a bunch of little pieces in there, it acted better than the laminated ones, because it still allowed time for that magnetic flux to be guided around to the secondary, but it didn't allow it to generate a lot of heat inside there. So heat's one of the losses. But even if you use just a standard transformer, there are ways where you can modify that transformer to literally capture any wasted heat energy that would have been otherwise put in there. Another one of the ways that energy is lost in a transformer is actually by sound. You wouldn't think about it, but it is. Whenever you plug in a transformer and you hear that thing going on, you'll hear a buzzing going. Well, that's essentially acoustic sound wave going on. That's a vibration, a sound wave that some of that energy is just been getting lost that way. So you're losing energy from leakage, which is the magnetic flux actually going out into the air. You're losing energy from the heat that is generated via the eddy currents because of the induction. Which is basically whenever you produce that, you put power to that coil, it produces a magnetic field and induces a current in the secondary through the actual core itself, but that process shakes everything up and causes it to get hot, produces these little tiny currents all the way through the entire core, and it just keeps getting hotter and hotter, and after a certain temperature, then your transformer will fail. But nonetheless, so you got leakage via the magnetic flux not being completely going to the secondary. You got eddy currents that are generating heat that are causing losses. And you got vibration, which is producing sound, which is also causing losses. So now that we know where all the losses are in the doggone transformers, now we can engineer transformers that will monopolize on those losses, that will ensure that there are no losses to that transformer. Now, if you took just a modern transformer, and you measured up the temperature of what it usually gets to, you know, when it's running under full load, operating temperature, whatever, then you can calculate up from that how much thermal energy you could actually take off of that transformer. Now, at the very least, you could make a water-cooled transformer that would actually keep that transformer cooler and reduce the losses as far as heat, because you could actually take that heat and use it for, you know, thermoelectrics. You know, like with Peltier elements. So let's say you got a old iron core transformer, and you drilled some holes down through the actual core itself, which wouldn't affect the windings, as long as you didn't dig into the windings. But you actually drilled holes down through there, and you run some tubing through there, copper tubing or whatever, back and forth through there, and made you sort of like a radiator style deal, and circulate water through that coil just by using thermal siphoning, not with any extra electricity or anything, just by using some thermal siphoning. If you got two different water temperatures in each container, then it will automatically siphon itself to the cooler spot. And so you could actually take heat off of that transformer while you were running it, which would make the transformer more efficient, because it'd be less because of the losses from the heat. And then by redesigning that same transformer to maximize the amount of flux according to how much energy you're fixing to put in this thing, how strong the magnetic field's actually going to be, you could visualize it like a basketball or something like that. That's how far the field is going to go around that transformer. Then you know you got that much area that you could maximize by putting all your primaries or all your secondaries and your primaries within that field. And so you could have multiple primaries in there, and you could have multiple secondaries all within that same exact field that would be maximizing the flux getting to the secondary to transfer that energy from one side to the next. And so if you're going to be stepping down the voltage anyway, then you've got a maximized efficient transformer design, then you're not going to have any losses in the system. So exactly what you're pulling from one end, you're going to have in the other end, just step down to a different voltage, maybe multiple different voltages and stuff like that. See, that's a big deal that we got going on right now. Every single electric motor that we've got, every single transformer that we've got, and even generators that we've got, they're all designed to not be that efficient. There's a lot of losses in the entire system. And I'm figuring like this, if heat is one of the byproducts of the losses in energy, because every energy out there produces heat because of the work that's being done. And so if you know that, now you got another source of energy that you can reclaim while you're actually doing the work that you wanted to do. Electric motors out there, you know, after they run for so long, they get really hot, and then they end up destroying themselves. Well, if you take that heat away from it, that motor will last forever. And so if you figure out a way to literally redesign your core so that you got a radiator in there, just like your car has a radiator, and you take that energy, the heat energy away, and use it for some other purpose, you know, like heating your water or heating your house or whatever, then the more that heat energy stays away from the motor that you're trying to keep cool, then the more efficient and the longer it'll last. See, everything has a thermal breakdown point. And if you can keep it from reaching its thermal breakdown point, then it'll never fail. It won't go bad. It won't start tearing itself up. Friction is what tears things up. When the thing reaches its thermal breakdown point, the bearings running across the seat are literally getting so hot that the weaker metal is going to get soft, and eventually it's going to start tearing itself up. Well, if you can keep that from temperature from ever getting to that point, you'd have bearings that would last forever. They wouldn't be able to go bad. There's no way physically possible for them to go bad until they exceed their thermal breakdown point. Once, you know, if you can keep it right before the thermal breakdown point, it's still warm, but it's not going to ever get to the temperature that actually causes it to soften up, then your bearings would last forever. Your engine would last forever. So if you had a way to take away that heat so rapidly that engine would never, ever, in the weakest part of that engine would never be able to reach its thermal breakdown point, then that engine would last forever. You would have an engine in your vehicle that you could drive and drive and drive it. It'd have millions of miles on it and still be as good as it was when it first came out of the factory. So that's the key. The key is to keep that heat from ever finding the weakest point and start to break your engine down from that point. Yeah, I should be. Let me take a look here.
Yeah, but then the more that heat energy.
Yeah, I'm good here, Steven. Hold on. There was a question of whether I was broadcasting. Oops. Must have some sort of difficulty going on out there. See, that's another thing, man. You know, when you get to talking about this kind of stuff out there, there's something in this world that don't want everybody to, share information like this, which is it drives me nuts. Anybody else having that problem? Let me look over here and see what's going on. All right. Sometimes people have problems listening in on the show because you might have to refresh or something like that. I don't know what. You know, there's people out there that really don't want us talking about anything from free energy to anything that's going to be more efficient. And, like, for example, why would they want me to tell everybody about running a car off of pure distilled water and they're trying to sell gasoline? That's blatantly obvious. You know, you can't sell no gasoline if everybody knows they can run their car off of water. Right now, your car's not specifically engineered to run off of water, but it could be. You know, anything out there could be used for fuel. If you look at basic science, science says that energy or water is hydrogen and oxygen, both of which are energy. So, anyway, if you took and specifically engineered it for that exact purpose, then that's exactly how it would run. Engines, they've been running steam engines for years. We've been using water for power and pressure and everything for years. But yet nobody has ever, went to the extreme to actually engineer an engine, an actual internal combustion engine that would run specifically off of pure distilled water. So, anyway, still trying to figure this out. I hope you get that resolved down there, brother. Anyway, so these transformer cores that I'm talking about, they're not engineered to be their greatest efficiency. So if you had these transformer cores designed so that if you knew you were going to generate heat in it anyway, then you might as well monopolize on that heat energy, such as using Peltier elements. I mean, if you have a Peltier element, all you have to do is have the two different temperature differences. If one side's on the hot transformer, and the other side is, out there exposed to, like, heat sinks or cold air, then now you can generate some electricity depending on how hot that transformer gets and the temperature difference between the atmosphere that surrounds it. So anyway, let me try one more deal here. I want to see. I don't like doing this live, but let me see if they're... Oh, got it. Error! I'll have to refresh that. Then it's going to start by itself. Let's see if this works. Alright, we're having a bit of difficulty. Some of the people in the chat can't hear the doggone player. That's why I say sometimes we get some crazy stuff going on out here with technology. Alright, what's going on here? And that and some of the doggone software out there, Microsoft has like... They mess everything up. They messed everything up from Skype to whatever. Certain Windows programs won't hear things, and if you ain't got certain updates, your older software won't work on certain computers and such. It's nuts. All right, now that's one of the things I need there. Come on, man. What's going on here? Sorry, folks. We'll get this resolved here in just a second. Sometimes you gotta restart a doggone browser just to get things to work anymore. Why can't they ever leave this well enough alone? That's the question. Do-do-do-do-do. Well, then again, you know, you also got those knuckleheads at the doggone ISP that like to steal bandwidth from you. Or if they don't like what you have to say, basically censor your streams and stuff. Let me push this one again. Yeah, I'm broadcasting out there, folks. I don't know what's going on in the deal. Try refreshing. Yeah, burn it. Anyway, so what the heck is going on here? Get me all frustrated. And that's why I call it mad science, man. Testing! Alright. Doggone it. Alright, so basically, I don't know why that's acting a fool like that. Do-do-do-do-do. Yeah. That's all the way up. Alright, so, apologize for that. So anyway, the transformer cores, if you get those things properly engineered, you could make them to where the flux lines, you ain't got no leakage from the flux. Everything's contained in. And if you know you're going to be generating heat anyway, you can monopolize on that temperature. That's crazy. I'm testing. 1, 2. Hello! Yes, I'm having an issue over here, but it shows I'm my doggone microphone's spiking on me. Testing. Yeah, this is like really bad for radio. All right, so if you can hear me now out there, let me know. Oh, two dog ears, that's good. All right, so. Anyway, that's the kind of stuff we got to deal with, folks. I'm going to try to refresh this just to see if that one over there gets to hear it, too. And it's probably got to do with whatever version of Windows you're working, because these idiots out there that working on the...
See, get me all there. Frustrated.
Yep, that's me banging on stuff. Alright, I got that resolved. Alright, so, anyway, can't trust Microsoft, you can't trust Google, you can't trust any of the doggone people out there writing the mainstream software. They always want to change stuff. They don't want people talking about certain things, and it's aggravating. It's aggravating because we're trying to put some, good information out there. You know, on one hand, they sit there talking about how they want to be clean, renewable, alternative energy, green energy technology and such. And yet, when guys like me come out and show them where the things need to be fixed, I mean, for example, you got an internal combustion engine and it's only 30% efficient. There's a problem there. There's actual room for improvement. And if you know where all the losses are, if you check at every single appliance out there, the majority of all the losses are due to heat, you know? And the rest of it due to flux leakage, even in an electric motor, you know, if you can take one of these AC meter testers. I don't know if I got any. I got one right about handy real quick, but there's these little deals where you can actually check for AC current. And whenever you do that, it'll beep, let you know that there's a field around there. Well, the only reason why you can measure that field is because it's actually wasted energy. It's leaking out into the air. Let's see if I put it down there. I don't know if you'll be able to hear it down that far. But if you can, let me see. Can you hear that in the background? Yeah, that is measuring just off of a wire. That's doggone leakage of a power line there. And let me see if I can find another one closer to the microphone then. There we go. That's off of another power cord. And the only reason why you can measure that is because that power is actually leaking out of the wire. All right, the magnetic field is actually leaking out. So, alright, cool. If you guys have that problem and you're using Firefox, Steven said all he had to do is reboot Firefox and he got it back. So, anyway, that's good. Have me all stressed out over here. So, anyway, when you're talking about these transformers, that third video that I posted down there in the chat room, doggone it, I lost my train of thought. Alright, so basically, that third one that I put down there, when you see what's going on in there, he's got about 6 to 10 windings. I didn't count them exactly, but looked about 6 to 10 windings on the primary. And he actually took a light bulb with a little bit of wire and wrapped it around 2 or 3 times, so about 6 turns on that, and was able to light that light bulb up. And so he's pulsing with a transistor or MOSFET a signal into that core that is sending that wave across. And on the other side, because of the number of turns and the size of the wire, he's actually lighting up an incandescent light bulb with that. So it shows it's got a lot of current. And so everything we need to know about those transformers and how to get that energy from one side to the next is already available. What I'd like to do is put a team together of individuals that want to see if we can build the maximum efficient transformer ever in existence. Because we know how all this is, all the magnetic fields are acting. We know how the magnetic flux is traveling. We know what we want out the other side. And if you're going to have to use a transformer, then you want it to be as efficient as possible. For example, if we didn't have to have transformers to step the voltage down, if everything ran on a standard current and it was already super efficient, then you'd be surprised at how little input you would have to produce in order to make enough power to run everybody's things. The videos that I posted on my YouTube channel, let me see if I can go over there to my page so I can refresh my brain. Okay, let me look. Do at least the newest ones. All right, I'm looking over on my YouTube videos in my video manager. All right, so now I'm over here on my video manager, and I'm looking at some of the videos. One of them's coil driver, one of them's pressure, one of them is rotary switch, and basically from the solved videos all the way down to the latest video, which is coil driver, it shows you different ways that where I'm actually taking transistors and MOSFETs. Basically, when I mention those two, they're almost like identical. One of them just holds more current. But anyway, they're just really fast switches. And all you need to produce a magnetic field and to produce a current in a coil is a change in polarity. You need a change in that field. The electrons inside of the copper windings are always trying to align themselves to whatever the magnetic field is. And when it's when there's no magnetic field present other than the Earth's magnetic field or nature or whatever, everything is just stationary, just idle. When you touch your power wires on the battery source, your input source, it produces a current that then in turn induces a magnetic field in your primary coil. Well, when you do that, the other secondary coil will match that field. Everything will align itself and then it stops. That's it. Alright, well, we can't get current that way. We need a change, a constant change in there to get that. And so we're basically turning that power on and off, on and off, on and off. And as that on and off is going and the field is expanding and collapsing, it's causing the electrons in the other secondary to be moving back and forth, which produces a current, which we call electricity. And so this normally is done with like permanent magnets in a generator or in an alternator system like in your car. The modern day alternators, you use an electromagnet to do the same job. So you have an electromagnet that's pulsing on and off that is basically giving you the change in current, the change in polarity that is making the electric current that's coming out the other side that you charge your battery with. So we understand all that. But the key is to be able to get more work done for less input to make it more efficient. It's not that we don't have enough power. We got plenty of power. We got more power than we need. That's why we're actually generating heat. In these last experiments that I've been doing, which I'll have to put another video up, and what I mentioned in the video coil driver, is that I bought a cheap circuit. It was a inverter circuit that I got from eBay out there, made over in China. And basically you hook that to a 12 volt battery, and then you hook that circuit to your transformer, and that produces that now is a completed inverter. But the key about that was that if you do it right, those transistors inside that circuit, they don't get hot. That means that is not drawing too much current. That means that the transistors won't reach their thermal breakdown, and that means that circuit is more efficient. And so it draws less from the battery in order to produce the electrical current you need on the other side. That's the key. So what I'm saying is, we actually have the knowledge to literally re-engineer everything to the point where we know where the losses are, we know what's causing the losses, and we know how to fix it. And so, imagine a transformer that you're going to use to be stepping down power anyway. You need to bring this power from, let's say, 120 volts AC, or even to 220 volts AC, depending on where you're at. Overseas, they use 220. Over here, we use 120 for whatever reason. They're at 50 hertz, we're at 60 hertz. Doggone it. I hate it when that happens. So anyway, we know that if we're running at 120 volts and we want to step it down to 12 volts so that we can run a smaller appliance, then all we need to do is reduce the number of turns on the secondary so that we can actually step that voltage down. But in the process of stepping that voltage down in that transformer, because of the way it's designed, we're actually going to generate heat. So why not take that heat off of that deal, off of that transformer core, and use it for another purpose? Maybe produce some more electricity that would, run something else, trickle charge a battery or something like that. You know, this is what I've been talking about for a long time, trying to get things more efficient so that you basically get your money's worth. But if we design the perfect transformers, and we have these transformers that are perfectly efficient, we can change that energy down without losing any energy. There are all kinds of different transformers out there that are on the market. There's some out there that are called dry transformers that don't have oil in them, that basically they figured out a safer way to reduce explosions or fires with transformers in case they get too hot. But even in the styles of transformers that they're using now, there's so much room for improvement. There's room for improvement in every doggone appliance that we got. So it's ridiculous. Anyway, so I'm trying to reach out to find a bunch of individuals that might be interested in doing some research in transformers, so that we can make really super efficient ones. That's what I'm going to be doing on myself. I'm holding a transformer in my hand right now that they call a magnetic ballast. It's just a little bitty tiny thing, but they use these in fluorescent lighting systems. And this particular transformer doesn't have a secondary winding on it. It's just a primary winding. But they figured out how they could pulse this primary winding and catch the back EMF, which essentially is when the field expands, that's your magnetic field. When the field collapses, it produces a back spike of energy that they call back EMF, electromagnetic field. So the field expands, that's your field out, and since there ain't no secondary, they're catching the power when that field slams shut, when they release the power. And since this is running off of AC current, the AC current itself is the change in polarity, so it doesn't need to have a secondary on there. It just basically bounces back and forth and catches the back spike every time that this thing pulses. And that makes this particular transformer pretty doggone efficient, with exception of any leakage that there might be around as far as magnetic flux. I mean, how strong does this thing get? How far does the magnetic field actually expand out of it? And you could actually take these right here to, pulse other coils side by side with them, because if the field is expanding farther than what this thing is needed to do, then you got extra flux available. Plus, if it's generating heat in the process, then you have heat available. So I don't look at losses in the system as a bad thing. Losses are another source of energy. If you know you're going to be generating that heat anyway, then you might as well monopolize on that heat and use it as opposed to lose it, kind of deal. So anyway, these transformers out here have a lot of room for improvement. I'm going to be spending a lot of time studying transformers. Been doing this for several weeks. I've been looking up all different types of transformers and designs and which ones are more efficient. And I think that I want to concentrate also on the ones that are already on the store shelves, things that you can find that are readily available, and find slight modifications for them. For example, this little magnetic ballast right here, couple windings on this thing right here, and I could actually turn this into a high voltage, like a ZVS driver. You know, a high voltage driver for whatever purpose that I want high voltage for. So, little transformers like that could be re-engineered just with a little bit of knowledge on how things work, you know. Sorry, folks, I'm like really distracted this morning for some reason. Everybody's players are dropping in and out on them. That stinks. I hate that when that happens. But rest assured, you won't miss the show because there will be a podcast up of it right after the show. Anyway. So when I talk about no losses, that is going to be the key to moving forward as far as people getting energy independent. You understand that whenever you're running any appliance in your house, if it's generating heat and that heat energy isn't being used, then that's considered a loss. If you can measure a magnetic field outside of that appliance, then that energy is being lost. If you can hear that appliance buzzing, then that's considered a loss. So, let's say hypothetically we wanted to engineer the perfect transformer. And we know that heat's going to be an issue. We know that vibration and sound losses are going to be an issue. And we know that magnetic field flux loss is going to be an issue. So how do we get about around all this? Well, first we got to have a metal or something that will be able to magnetize and demagnetize rapidly. And so we got a lot of choices of different types of materials out there, ferrite being one of them. And we need to reduce the amount of vibration that's available when that thing's running. There's current, I said available. Like, who knows? Well, we could actually use that vibration with some Peltier elements. That vibrating core could actually produce electricity that way. But anyway, let's see if we can dampen the whole thing just with a little bit of knowledge that we got. If we need the metal core in order to be able to distribute the flux around to the secondary to get the majority of that flux around there, and if you look at the way those magnetic fields are actually being created, the strength of that is in the center of that doggone coil. You know, you notice that the field lines will get farther and farther apart outside that coil, but the strength of it's inside the coil. So that's why the magnetic core, or the metal core, or whatever, the ferrite core, whichever you put, is actually going inside the coil, and it's getting all that. But then it's what on the outside is what it's losing. So in order for them to try to capture more of it, they put more iron around the outside. So if you actually look at a transformer, you'll know it's got E-shaped or I-shaped or whatever. And that core actually surrounds the coil. And so it's catching as much flux as it possibly can. But if you re-engineered that thing to completely surround that coil with the core material, then you would be able to catch yet even more of that. And if your core material was made up of something that, like ferrite, that was able to reduce the temperature and the eddy currents that's being produced inside there, but still be able to guide that magnetic field in and out of your primary and your secondary to transfer that energy from one to the next, then you would make it yet even more efficient. So, what would stop somebody from actually making a combination soft, like a rubber mixed with iron core. The rubber being able to reduce any vibration in that and reduce any sound that would be caused by that, because it'd basically be insulated. And be able to still transmit the magnetic flux in and out of the primary and the secondary without vibrating and without generating heat, in order to be able to get the work done and be just the perfect size that the magnetic flux line are all being used, and every single part of the secondary is being touched by the magnetic flux that's generated in the primary. So you'd have the perfect core. You'd have the perfect core that wasn't losses from heat, wouldn't have losses from vibration, and wouldn't have losses from leakage. If you have people out there who are interested in transformer technology and want to get together with me, have them contact me on Skype. Have them contact me in the chat room, because I'd really like to talk with them. I'd really like to work with them if they're interested in doing this. Because I believe that it's not only possible to build perfectly efficient transformers, but I also believe that it's also possible to use that electricity in a completely different fashion than what we do right now. And so, basically, right now, if you actually look at how we look at how we use electricity, we are fighting against the same amount of power that we want to use. For example, I got a transformer. It's hooked up to a pulse circuit, which essentially is some transistors that are coming off of a 12-volt battery, and it's sending a frequency, a wave, out to that core, that transformer that I want to charge. And so for in order for me to pull power off the secondary, I have to have the hot wire side of it and the ground, which is basically the transformer core itself, in order to be able to reuse that energy. Well, if I do that, then it will produce a second magnetic field, which throws in the lens effect, lens law, right in the mix there. When you induce a current in a magnetic field, a second current, it creates a magnetic field, and that current flow produces a second magnetic field that is trying to counteract the first magnetic field. Nature's trying to balance itself out. Well, the whole key about getting this energy out of there without making it have to work so hard, which in turn is going to generate heat and cause it to fail, is to take that energy away from that core. That's the whole deal. If you can take that energy away from that core, guide it somewhere else, and use a secondary ground that is not related to the first one. See, that's the cool thing about AC current. When you generate AC current, it's basically a back and forth wave. It's in, it's out, it's in, it's out. Back and forth, back and forth. Alright? And so, not like DC current where you'd actually have to have a direct connection to this doggone thing. You can have an AC current with a single wire. That single wire, you could reach out and touch that single wire, but the moment you reach out and touch the ground, then that's when you complete a circuit and you get lit up. So that tells me that you don't have to have the same ground to the same system. It doesn't have to be a closed system, that you could actually use the earth ground, the earth itself as a ground, kind of like the power company does. And with that said, then that means that your energy, whenever you turn your light bulb on, that energy ain't going right back into the same generator you're trying to pull power from, and it's not producing a second field, it's making that thing work harder. Now, the reason why those transistors end up failing is because they end up drawing too much current, which causes them to get hot and they reach the thermal breakdown and they fail. But these experiments that I've been doing here recently with transistors and pulse and microwave oven transformers, which I mentioned the latest video that I did was the one that's called Coil Driver. It's got about 116 views so far, which ain't much, but at least 14 people liked it. Anyway, check out that video, and you'll see a circuit that I bought on eBay, and amazingly enough, those circuits, they only cost like $5. That's pretty cheap, but for experiment purposes, it's great. So, alright, so, I can't believe how incredibly distracted I am today. Sorry, folks. Somebody want to join in on this radio show and keep me focused? That's not going to be that. Anybody wants to join in, just throw a thumbs up in the Mad Science Room and I'll add you to a call. But for some reason, I'm trying to keep up with everything that's going on out there, making sure everybody can hear fine and everything, and my brain is just like bouncing all over the place. Anyway, there's a couple different videos on there, not really super high quality videos, but the explanation was pretty good, so I went ahead and posted them anyway, that talk about energy losses and transformers. And the last video down there where it shows how to put in a high frequency and actually get current out the other side. This is one of the ones that is really important, because it's key to what I've been saying. Because everybody's like, y'all, you got to have all this current in order to be able to get this thing to work. But what I've been trying to tell everybody forever and a day, and they just don't seem to get it. And even if they think they get it, they don't really get it. But this deal where I pulsed these two microwave oven transformers and was able to get high voltage out the other side, I can actually grab the input wires bare hand and hang on to those input wires, and there is no electrical shock. And that tells me that that is only sending a radio frequency into that primary. But if you take and grab a hold of the two output wires on the secondary, I'm telling you, it will light you up. And it hurts. I know, I done it twice. And it wasn't on purpose. Well, maybe the first time I did it was on purpose, because I didn't think it was working. But then I reached over and touched it, and I got a renewal to my hairstyle, if you understand what I'm saying. So, anyway, that told me that you do not require as much input as people think in order to produce the amount of energy that we need. Transistors and MOSFETs can produce a synthetic magnetic wave via that signal that it can send through there. Well, the key to this whole deal was that the transistors and the MOSFETs were not getting hot. The primary coil was not getting hot. The transformer itself was not getting hot. So, if you have these things running at the right frequency, they won't get hot. Right now, we're running our appliances at 50 and 60 hertz. And so, they're generating eddy currents inside there. 50 or 60 hertz is a lot less than what I'm actually running these frequencies at. But, it's allowing more time for those eddy currents to be in existence. At higher frequencies, you can skim right past it, and it won't have time to get hot. The field is expanding and collapsing so rapidly that it's still producing energy on the other side, but it's coming in a completely different form. Look here, I got I think Raymond wants to join in. That'd be good. Okay, cool. Come to my rescue. How you doing there, brother? You're live. Hello. I had you there for a second. but then I lost you. Alright, so anyway, basically what I was trying to explain was that the way we run our standard form of electricity, we got losses. We got, because we have to run, when it comes out of the, you know, the wall outlet, which is basically coming from a step down transformer to our box, and then in order for us to be able to use it, we have to be able to step it down, unless our appliances will work directly off of a specific voltage, then it has to be stepped down, which means we have to use a transformer. And even the electric motors that we're using are the equivalents of a transformer. They have a an iron laminate core in there, and they basically use the same process of induction in order to be able to turn the fan and such. And so even those are generating eddy currents, which is generating heat. And so even our electric fans could be made to be more efficient by re-engineering. Now that we understand exactly what's going on in a transformer, we can understand how to re-engineer even our electric motors in order to maximize the energy usage. Look, when you produce a magnetic field with a copper wire, that magnetic field will only expand so far. So you could actually take magnet paper and you could put it over your transformer and you could see the exact full extent and the shape of the magnetic field. And in a transformer, because you have losses in flux lines, that means that whenever you produce that magnetic field, some of that magnetic field is actually going out into the air. Like if you got a square transformer, you'll have a round circle around there, so all that that's outside that transformer is wasted. It's not making it to the secondary. The only reason why you need a core to begin with is so that you can transfer that, as much of that flux from that magnetic induction from the first, from the primary, to get it over there to the secondary to detect the change in the magnetic field. So that's why them toroids, those round magnet cores, are a lot more efficient than a square one, because it actually sends it around a circle. But even those still have losses. So if you had a toroidal short-shaped core and you put a magnet paper over the top of it, and you got your magnetic field is actually several inches on the outside of that transformer when it's running under a full load, then you could actually run another secondary right around that to the full diameter of whatever that field ends up being, making that same transformer even more efficient. So how you doing there, Raymond?
Pretty good. I had to be quiet for a little bit so put the headset on so you don't get all this background noise. By the way, what you're talking about is almost exactly what I was talking to Scott Brown, or Muddy Man, many years ago. I mean, a magnet has two sides, and a coil has two sides. He used to build these axial flux PMAs, permanent magnet alternators.
Yeah.
And the thing is, he would use two discs with magnets on it so that magnets would pass over both sides of the coil. And I kept trying to tell him, Scott, why are you using two discs with magnets on it and one disc with coils, when you can use five or six discs with magnets and five or six discs with coils? And in other words, you compound it. Therefore, you don't lose any of your magnetism, except on your last coil.
Yeah.
That'll be your last disc on both ends. You can build an axial flux alternator and actually multi-layer the cotton picking thing. It's what you're talking about, so you don't waste that energy.
Yeah.
It would take a lot of energy to turn it, but it would create way more energy than you're actually putting into it.
Well, I'm thinking that since we know there's at least three separate losses in every transformer out there.
Right.
One of them is magnetic flux, what we just talked about.
Right.
The next one is heat due to eddy currents that are created as the field is changing in the metal core. Or ferrite core, even. Ferrite cores reduce it because of the way that they're designed. but I think there's still room for improvement. And so they'll run actually cooler than the laminate cores. They'll definitely run cooler than a solid iron core and be more efficient. But so you go from an iron core to a laminate iron core to ferrite, to ferrite being the best. And I believe there's room for efficiency as far as that. And even if you can't figure out a way to get a material that will magnetize and demagnetize rapidly enough to reduce the eddy currents to almost non-existent, then you could take and drill holes in that same transformer and run some sort of lines through there, tubing through there, where you could actually circulate a coolant through that core in order to take away that heat. And
use the heat somewhere else.
Yeah, use the heat with Peltier elements or thermopiles or thermocouples or whatever.
What you said a minute ago, you said, I believe there is room for improvement.
Yeah.
Now, let me tell you something. Think about this a minute. As long as something is not 100% efficient, then there is room for improvement.
Yeah.
Period. If it's 99% efficient, then you still have 1% possibility of improvement. That's all there is to it.
Yeah.
So if what we're using is only 30 or 33% efficient, duh, there is a lot of room for improvement.
So we've talked about the flux leakage. That's one big deal. The right. heat that's generated is another big deal, and one that people don't think about is vibration, which also produces sound, which is another energy loss.
Yes, exactly. Hey, have you ever been real close to a big transformer?
Yeah, they buzz.
Hum, buzz and hum and carry on.
Yeah.
You walk up and you just barely touch it with your fingers and shut your eyes and you can feel the vibrations.
So imagine if you took some of those piezoelectric crystals that you gathered up, and
right.
and you put those around that transformer in between, you know, loosely coupled in between a casing that you create on the outside, while that thing's sitting there vibrating back and forth, buzzing, slapping these piezoelectric crystals, it's actually making a little bit more noise, but it's actually producing electricity
exactly.
through the piezoelectric.
Uh-huh.
So, there are methods by which we can actually improve the efficiency just by using what would have normally been considered wasted energy. We talked about this with the internal combustion engine as well. You know,
right.
that thing produces a massive amount of wasted energy. And if you monopolize on it, instead of letting it just go out into the atmosphere and such, then you make that thing more efficient.
Right.
So, I'm thinking, I'm trying to get a group of individuals that want to work with me on a specific project, such as making a super efficient transformer, because I got many ideas. Whether they all pan out, who knows? But at least that's how you're going to get it figured out, is by, you know, testing or whatever. So I got some ideas about ways to reduce eddy currents. Like maybe, for example, yesterday I was thinking about copper-coated BBs as a transformer core. Now, how would that make anything any better? Well, if you think about it, it's a copper-coated BB, and so those magnetic flux lines will actually be crossing that BB as well. And so that copper will be affected by that, and it will produce its own field. You see what I'm saying?
Yes, I do.
And so all these fields will interact with each other. If these BBs were actually, producing a charge on each other, which they would have to be if they're involved in a changing magnetic field, these BBs would be rattling around in there like you wouldn't believe. I mean, almost like little magnets. But they'd also be producing a charge. With that charge could actually build up onto the core, which would be the core itself, and that charge could probably be gathered up. You see what I'm trying to say here?
Yes, I do.
And so if you had these BBs were in there in contact with each other, and they're not like cram-packed on each other, you'd build up a massive charge just from that flux of those BBs slapping around inside there. So you would be able to transfer the flux through each of the, from the primary to the secondary, and be able to get that amount of energy. Plus, you would be able to monopolize on the charge that was building up on those BBs. And all these charges want to go from negative to positive, is what the science says. Now, it's all going from negative to positive. And so if this was a positive charge on there, then anywhere from the ground to that, you'd have a completed circuit. If it ended up being a negative charge on there, that would be even better, because that would actually strengthen that core if you had to go from your positive charge coming out of your secondary back to that core. It would boost that power up. You see what I mean?
Yes, I do.
So, it's an idea, and as far as if we didn't want to have any noise to the thing, we could encase these into some sort of flexible resin, so to speak. What do you think?
I think you're right. I think you got a really great idea. But what would it take to actually build something to experiment with that?
Well, I think I've probably got everything I need already.
Well, they make the copper-coated sealed BBs like you're talking about. And they're not expensive. But how would you magnetize them?
What do you mean? The copper-coated BBs?
Yeah.
The center's already metal.
Yeah, that's what I said.
Yeah.
How would you magnetize it permanently?
Oh, you don't want them magnetized permanent.
Oh, okay.
No, you want that field, you want them to be able to be magnetized, but demagnetize as fast as possible.
Oh, now I fully understand what you're talking
about.
Yeah. Okay, I was wondering how you were going to get these magnets, little bitty round magnets to bounce around.
And so I'm thinking that if the doggone, if the copper coating on there is enough to produce a magnetic field, we know what happens when two magnetic fields come in contact with each other.
Right.
Alright, well, those two magnetic fields, if you're wanting to expand and collapse them rapidly, those two magnetic fields would interact with each other to do just that. You see what I mean?
Yes, I do. Now, wait a minute. They already make nickel-plated neodymium magnets in a little round sphere. And they're not expensive either. But they are charged already, but they're permanently charged. But if you pass a current through them alternating, you could get them to bounce around a lot.
Yeah.
Okay. And the thing is, you get the nickel plated ones. Nickel in itself is magnetic unless you heat it. And it takes very little heat for it to lose its magnetism. Very little. But it'll come right back.
Yeah, well, I'm thinking more along the lines of the reason why they use ferrite is because it will release its magnetic field quickly.
Right.
And you need that rapid change in order to induce a current into the secondary.
Right.
All right, and that's why I was thinking the copper-coated BBs, because part of it's metal and the other part of it's copper, those two would interact with each other to help to cancel out that magnetic field rapidly, or even change it rapidly. You see what I'm saying?
Yes, sir. I do.
So, that's what we need. We need a changing magnetic field, and so it's going to do one of two things. It's either going to help us change the field better, or it's going to help it collapse faster by draining off that charge when those two BBs are, like, let's say we just got two or three BBs in there. When those three BBs are touching each other and exchanging their charge,
right?
And that will change that field. You see what I mean?
Yes, sir. I do. I really do.
So, it was a thought I had last night about what type of material you could actually use for building a transformer core that would be super efficient. So, basically, all I got to do is get me a standard coil, and I can build it, you know, or pull something out of an old transformer, and then surround it, I mean, encase it, completely surround it with BBs. So I'd have a big old pile of BBs, and that core would be right dead center in it, and then I'd fire that thing up and see what the secondary produces. What do you think?
Yeah. Okay.
And if it produces a lot more heat, and it's still it's still running really good, then that means I just produce enough of heat energy that I could actually take that heat energy away and do something else with.
There you go.
So, I'm looking at the negatives as pluses as well. If you understand what I'm saying.
Yes, I fully understand that.
So, if it's going to be generating heat anyway, because we have to step this voltage down to be able to use it, then we might as well monopolize on it, and that would actually raise the efficiency, because instead of losing that heat to the atmosphere or the surroundings, we're actually using it for generating yet even more power.
Now you're talking my language.
Yeah. So you got any thoughts on it?
Yeah, I think you covered everything. Pretty good, going good so far. You're going right along the way my lines of thinking. You know, we've got so much stuff that is inefficient, or it's only a percentage of efficient. Therefore, there is room for improvement, and the best way to improve something inefficient is to take the waste and use it.
Yep. I watched a video yesterday where it was actually made back in, I believe, in 1961, and they were explaining magnetic field propagation and how they actually travel. And they had a couple antennas that were horizontal. There was two separate antennas that were horizontal, and they showed that they had a transmitter that was going vertical, and as they shot this wave at the transmitter, it barely picked up the signal. But once they turn this thing horizontal along with the horizontal antenna, then you had a flat wave that came all the way across over there and hit that antenna receiver, and you could hear the volume automatically spike up. And so that give you a visual of like a pool in a ring in a pool of water, where when you throw like a pebble in there and that ripple goes out in a flat wave, but it's still a wave going all the way across the water. It gives you a visual of how that signal was actually being transmitted out.
Right.
And so if we could get a 3D visual of an actual working magnetic field, like basically take a sort of a ferrous, feral fluid, and put a electrical core right dead center in it, with a non-conductive material, just have it right dead center of this liquid, and then put a AC power source to it, we could actually visually watch the magnetic field lines and get a 3D model of exactly the exact dimensions and shape of that magnetic field as it's being pulsed. You see what I'm saying? Are you still there? Raymond? I think I lost him. Yikes. Anyway, so what would that do for us? That would give us the exact dimensions of exactly where that magnetic field was going, so that we could build a perfect transformer that everything, the primary and the secondary, would be maximized inside this field. If the primary was producing, let's say the primary is the actual heart of the core, and the secondaries are going to be on the outside of the primary. So when you pulse this, the whole key is to get those flux lines to cross every single winding of the entire primary instead of just parts of it like the average transformer does now, in order to produce the most efficient electrical current. And so if the primary is the heart of it, and you got a 12 inch in diameter magnetic flux that is going in a full 360 degrees around that core, then that means you got all that area inside there that you can maximize your secondaries in order to be able to capture every single bit of that flux.
You didn't lose me. I muted my mic because I had to get some ice on my orange juice.
Oh, okay.
I got a very, very sensitive mic. I didn't want to disturb you.
So, what did you think about that?
I think you're right, man. It sounds good.
Well, it's something that I believe I have the capabilities of doing right here. So, I think what I'm going to try to do, I need a good, like mineral oil or something that's non-conductive that, vegetable oil probably work, but either way, and mix it with some, iron ferrite, make a see-through ferrule, material, liquid, that I can put a transformer in the very center of a clear container so that you can actually physically see that magnetic flux lines.
I think you're right about the vegetable oil, because vegetable oil is a very, very good conductor of heat, and it will take a lot of heat before it starts to degrade.
Yep.
I mean, you heat vegetable oil up to 500 degrees with almost practically no damage at all. You only damage it once you pass 600 degrees. And there again, it takes on heat and gives off heat very rapid.
Yeah.
So it would be a great thing. And the fact that it is vegetable oil, it would be non-polluting.
Yeah.
It would be great for the environment. It's great for your transformer. I mean, duh. Come on, think about that a minute. Regular motor oil degrades at the same temperature. At 600 degrees, it starts to degrade. I mean, think.
Well, that's the whole key. If we're not reaching our thermal breakdown of the copper, the insulation that's on the wire.
Right, the insulation on the copper wire.
Yeah. So if the insulation's good up to so many degrees and that oil is up to even higher than that, then that means that oil's got to get really hot in order to be able to run the insulation.
Right. As long as you don't ruin the insulation or burn the copper wire in two, your transformer would last forever.
Yeah. So,
we're out.
I'm visualizing a transformer that it could be made. You'd have to have some custom laminates cut, but I'm visualizing a transformer that is literally spherically shaped, that has the primary at the very center heart of it, and has all these ports so that you can get liquid through there, oil, so that the entire thing is all submersed, and then all the way around this entire deal, the sphere itself, you can wrap multiple secondaries around this thing so that every single bit of that flux that the primary is actually capable of is actually being used to its maximum efficiency. You see what I mean?
Yes, I do. That's very interesting, because you stop and think about what you're saying. They used to make, I don't know if they still do or not, I'm pretty sure they do, but they used to make a machine that would take strain and wind it around to where it would actually make a round sphere, then they covered that with a leather coating and called it a baseball.
Yeah,
so why couldn't you just, like you said, take one of those machines, take your copper wire the size you want, and wind it around till it becomes a round sphere, and then take another size copper wire and wind it around that so the sphere becomes bigger, but it's two layers of copper wire.
Yeah.
It's basically what you're actually talking about, right?
Yeah, so an actual baseball-making machine could probably build the coil that I'm talking about.
Yes, yes, it could. Think about it. It really could.
So,
and the thing is, you could make it multiple layers.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be just two layers. You can make it multiple layers.
So you could have multiple primaries or secondaries.
Exactly. Multiple primaries and multiple secondaries.
Yeah.
Over and over and over again. Why not?
And then that and that thing be submersed in oil, so the temperature would be down there. All you have to do is keep that oil cool, and you could do that. There's so many different ways for that. Or you could actually use the temperature of the, if the oil did get hot, to basically produce thermoelectrics.
Right.
Man, I'll tell you what, with the right doggone crew together, that people that really seriously want to do, to build a perfect efficient transformer, I'm 100% positive it's possible. You know?
Well, you know, to me, the theory sounds great, but not all theories will work. But at the same time, how do you know if you don't try?
Well, even if we do try, and we're only able to improve the efficiency, let's say even 10%, it's even...
That was my thought, 10%. If we can improve it 10%,
yeah.
Think about that. Just think about it. I mean, dang on, man. But we know it can be improved on because it's not 100%.
Yep.
And we know it can be improved on. We're just trying to figure out how. I like your idea.
Folks, also, I want to, because we had a little bit of issues earlier in the chat with sometimes people's browsers aren't wanting to work right, and the doggone radio show sometimes wants to give them a hassle, whatever. That's because we're running multiple different platforms all over the place. But anyway, I wanted to mention again, there is a new button right above the in the chat room, above the radio player, called Stephen's Resource Page. And Stephen has taken a lot of time out of his own personal time to literally gather, you just have to see it for yourself, there is a massive amount of research available that he has put on there on the research page. All right, it's got YouTube researchers, websites, and links to everything. He's got videos posted on here, inventors and devices, books and PDFs, and it just goes on and on down through there. Folks, I encourage you to share this page with people if you're interested in alternative research. You know, it's not necessarily information that, if you're not happy with the information that you're getting on the actual radio show itself, don't underestimate this site, because what Stephen just posted on there is like a gold mine of researchers out there. He's got tons and tons of listed researchers and their YouTube channels, and man, it is just a brilliant, brilliant page. Thank you again, Stephen, for the awesome job you did on that. But I'm going to try to post this same button on every other page as well, so that if anybody stumbles on it, they'll find it. But if you're interested in alternative energy resources, Stephen's the man. Go check out Stephen's resource page, because he put it all out there. And if you find anything that might be missing that you think would be good to add to that, contact Stephen in the chat room, and he'd be more than happy to throw it up there for you. So there you go, folks. We finally got that resource page that I've been telling you about. It's a really nice page. It's got a lot of information available to you. And if you can't find free energy after that, you're just simply not looking hard enough. That's it. All right, so I wanted to re-mention that, but back onto the transformers out there. Even the transformers that are on the poles out there next to your house that are connected to the main power grid, those still have room for improvement. But the thing about it is, they got some secrets in those transformers that the average Joe ain't really aware of. See, I was doing an experiment with transistors and circuit boards in order to be able to pulse the coils. Because what I wanted to find out was, could I take a transistor or a MOSFET and make a synthetic magnetic field using very low input in order to be able to produce the same amount of magnetic flux that would pulse a primary? And the answer to my question was yes. I actually bought these circuits off of eBay for $5, which are, they're called inverter circuits that are actually inverter drivers for whatever transformer you want to drive to make an inverter. Well, these were set to run at from 12 volts to 220 volts AC. But you can also run them on one single leg, like I show in the video that I talked about earlier called Coil Driver. It was my last video that I put up there. I can't believe there's only 160 views on it right now, but you know, when people find out what I just showed them, they're probably going to want to tell people about it, and they're probably going to want to go out and get some of them circuits. They're only $5 on eBay for one of those circuits. I actually went out and I bought two of them originally to test, and when I found out what they were capable of, I bought four more of them, and I'm probably going to buy yet even more of them, because there's one of the researchers out there that I can't remember the actual deal, but it was a permanent magnet, it's basically a generator with no moving parts, and this would give you the start for that you could actually take these circuits and test them with all kinds of different transformers, electric motors, and be able to produce a magnetic field strong enough to actually run that electric motor off of a 12 volt battery. And the way that these things work, and it's amazing, because those transistors are not getting hot unless you feed that power back into it and cause it to draw more current. And so that's the reason why I come into talking about the transformers today, about how we're using these transformers, how we're taking the power off of them. And when you figure out what's actually going on, then you can actually move that energy away from that transformer and not send it back into that same transformer, which will make sure that that doggone circuit board doesn't have to work hard. And if that circuit board ain't working hard and you're producing, right now I'm producing at least 4,000 volts with a 12 volt circuit that I was actually, and I show you in the video, I was actually able to run an electric motor off of. Well, one thing that I didn't show in the video that I've done since was I was trying to figure out how to be able to get that thing to run without tripping that relay. And I'm going to have to do an update video on it, but all I had to do was add an AC run capacitor on the output side of it, and I was able to get that same electric motor to run off of that same circuit without having that relay tripping. So you can move that energy away from, and that's the key to a transformer, is to get that energy away from that transformer. Move it away from that transformer in the storage of doggone capacitors, so that when you put a load on that, without that doggone capacitor involved in there, when you put a load on that, that energy, the motor that you're trying to run can't handle all the power that you're trying to send through it, so it feeds it back onto that transformer, which strengthens that back EMF field, which is putting a load on that transformer, which is then in turn putting a load back onto the circuit. But if you keep that energy going away from that transformer, then you never put that load on the transformer core itself. What?
Yep.
So, these little circuit boards are brilliant because you can use them in several different ways. But
hey, I got an idea for this. Why don't you go to where the site that you actually bought it and copy the URL and put it in the chat room so people can go directly to that?
Yeah, I could do that. Let's see.
That way they wouldn't have to look for it.
Yeah, I'll do that. All right, so essentially, I'm gonna go over here to eBay, and I'm gonna click on the the doggone deal, and I'll post you a link in the chat room of the same exact circuit that I used. I thought I posted that earlier, but maybe I didn't. I don't remember.
It wouldn't hurt to post it 4 or 5 times.
Yeah.
I don't mean all at one time. I mean, you know, like today, 2 days from now, whatever.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
So people can find it. But that is a very good idea. The thing is, we need to use more detailed information about what it is you're using so that people don't have to spend hours trying to find it and see, well, is that the one he's talking about? No. Put the URL right in the chat room so people go directly to it.
All right. Well, I'm working on that right now.
All right.
But, anyway, these particular circuits are already put together, so it makes it really ridiculously simple that if you decide you want to do some research in what it is that I'm talking about, these things are only like $4.89 a piece. That's $4.89 U.S. a piece.
Is it free shipping or is
that? Yeah, free shipping.
Free shipping. Yeah. Wow. That's excellent.
Well, so what I'm believing that could be done with these things is that you could actually pulse electric motors with them direct. Because a transformer and electric motor have something in common. All they need is a magnetic field. They don't care about the rest of the stuff. All right? So I'm going to take this to the tiny URL deal. And
chocolate.
What?
Okay.
I'm going to take this to the tiny URL and shrink this URL up so be when I post it, this link, that it won't be, like, giant. Anyway, I believe that these little circuits are capable of actually pulsing electric motors as well. Because, like I said, the transformer, the primary transformer, it's just looking for a magnetic field. That's all it's looking for. There it is, tiny URL. That's all it's looking for. And when you get two different the fields, like let's say you put one of these circuits on one side of the electric motor windings, and then you put another one on the other side, those two are going to interact with each other. And as the AC is pulsing back and forth inside there, it's going to be turning that motor. So I honestly believe you could probably run a 220 motor off of 12-volt car battery.
Oh, I know you can do that.
Yeah, but I mean, efficiently.
yeah, but the thing is, I've already got those inverters. I bought them from China.
Yeah.
I've got inverters that will, you put, clip it onto a 12-volt car battery, and it'll give you 220 volts.
No, what I'm saying is, without the transformer, yeah. I'm talking about running these directly to the windings of the motor itself.
You okay. Know,
yeah, not but like the, your, not like your...
What I'm saying is, it already exists. What you're talking about is there. But
yeah.
You're just talking about doing it simpler.
Yeah, easier.
Okay. A lot easier, simpler, cheaper, faster, and just as efficient, if not more.
Okay, I'm going to post this in there. Somebody let me know if this is the right URL. If you click on it, you should get a copy of the circuit that I'm talking about on eBay. Paste. Posting it in all the chat rooms. Alright, there we go.
I don't see it yet.
Well, I didn't post it in that chat room yet. Here, I'll...
Okay.
I'll copy it and get it over there to you. Do-do-do-do-do. Alright, now it should be coming into your Skype.
Yep. There it is. All right.
All right. Well, that's the circuit that I'm talking about. And I only used the first two legs off of that. It's not the way it was supposed to be run, but you know me. I'm going to try every way to run it as opposed to the way that it's meant to be. But
okay, now, from the picture I'm looking at, it's got some really nice heat sinks, which means it is going to put off heat. And that heat can be used.
Yeah, but see, the way that I ran these things,
uh-huh.
They didn't even get hot.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
And the core, the primary coil, or the core, neither one of those got hot either.
Wow.
So, you're going to run it a heck of a lot more efficient than what it was actually designed, which is going to be even better, because the more efficient you run, the less likely you're going to blow it up.
Right.
Well, that's what I show in this video, and that's what I tried to emphasize in this video, was that by driving these coils, and I was running not one, but two microwave oven transformers with that same circuit, and that circuit did not get hot. What do you think?
I like it. I really do. It sounds great.
I'm going to go ahead and click on my coil driver video and get a link in there. I'll have to pause this real quick as soon as it comes on, because otherwise it'll play the doggone commercial live. But it's still trying. I'm going to have to I'll try to be faster than in YouTube. Anyway, I'm going to repost that video so that you can check out what I did in there, and hopefully you'll understand what it is I'm saying.
Okay, I'm reading this thing where it says international shipping.
Yeah.
May be subject to customs. So how long did you have to wait to get this thing, and did they charge you any import duties on it?
I ain't charging no import.
Okay.
And
so it's real simple. How long does it take to get it?
I don't remember actually how long. Probably about, it could be as much as 30 days, I'm sure. But
okay.
Nonetheless, it's worth the wait. And I'm sure you can find them other places where you can get them faster. Whoever I bought it from the last time, I think it took me probably about 3 or 4 weeks to get it.
Right. Sorry.
Anyway, right underneath that link, I'm posting a link to the video that I was talking about coil driver. That is the circuit that was used in that video.
Uh-huh.
And so, you'll see what the capabilities of it are. And there's actually more capabilities that I need to do an updated video on to show.
Okay. Right down here it says, delivery estimated, between Monday, February the 12th, and Friday, March the 23rd. So, yeah, anywhere from 2 to 6 weeks.
Yeah.
Depending on where you live and how fast they get it out to you.
Yeah. But, you know, like I said, it was worth the wait for me.
Okay, it says delivery estimated no greater than 20 business days. So you're talking no more than 3 weeks.
Yeah.
That's great. And like you said, for what it is, that's not a long time to wait.
No.
For the price.
Yeah, because the whole key was, I've been looking for the right driver circuit for a long time to be able to run tests to see what coils I could actually pulse, you know, and be able to get out usable energy on the other side.
Right.
And to do it as efficiently as possible. Well, here's another key about this particular circuit. The battery charger, I was running directly off the battery charger at one point, and that battery charger is only good up to 1 amp. And the battery that I was using a couple little small 12-volt batteries, and I don't even know what the amperage is on that. But the key is, I was able to run this circuit off of a battery charger that is only good up to 1 amp. So I know that I was at least 1 amp or below of input power, and being able to generate that much power on the other side.
Daggone. That's unreal.
So as far as I'm concerned, that's efficiency.
Yes, sir.
So with those particular circuits, if you have some of those and you're interested in testing, I used a microwave oven transformer, two of them. Not one, but two microwave oven transformers in parallel on that same circuit off of just two of the legs on there. And so essentially I'm basically running off of the frequency for 120 volts. But with two transformers going, that that circuit did not get hot. The windings did not get hot. The only heat that was generated was on the high voltage outside, output side, and that was in the neon bulbs that I was lighting up with the deal. Now, I could reach down and I could grab a hold of my bare hands the input wires on the primary side and not even get shocked. But when I made the same mistake on the opposite side, I got lit up, brother.
You like that, don't you?
No. That hurt. So I'm telling you, if you do this and you test them and you think you ain't getting no power out the other side, use a neon bulb or something like that to test your voltmeter to test that, because wasn't making no sound, wasn't no vibration in the transformer, wasn't making no sound, so I didn't think anything was even going on, and I reached down and touched that wire, that output wire on the high voltage secondary, and then I made the mistake of touching the doggone the core of the transformer. And boy, I tell you what, I found out real fast there was a lot of power coming through that thing. Yeah.
Yes. You can say you don't like it at all, but I'll tell you right now, I know you do. You love getting shot.
Well, that one hurt. So, anyway, the whole key about this is this: we're trying to find the way, a way to maximize what we're using. So if you got a circuit like this that will run under 1 amp, you know, and be able to produce that much energy on the other side and get the work done that you need, then that only 1 amp draw through that entire cycle, you can make those batteries last so doggone long that you can get more efficiency out of your solar panels or your wind generators, because you're only going to be drawing 1 amp no matter what you do on the other side. All you're going to be drawing is 1 amp from that circuit. You see what I mean?
Yep.
You know, that's the problem. You know, you draw like multiple amps off of every doggone circuit. Look at your house right now. Your house is insane how much amperage that you draw. And if you can reduce that amp draw and run appliances using this particular idea, if you modified your blender to run off of this frequency as opposed to the frequency it's running straight from the wall, but now your blender will work off of this little circuit and you're only using 12 volts to do it, you just made that thing incredibly efficient. You see what I mean?
Yes, sir.
So, if I had a power bank, and the power bank was secondary to my mains voltage, and all I used my mains voltage was to charge up my power bank, that was it. I don't use it for anything else but to charge my power bank. And so, because of the way that the system's all set up to basically run inefficient, I start slightly modifying each one of my deals to only use the amount of power they need to use in order to be able to run. And I take that energy off of my power bank. Then the only power that I'm paying for is what it takes to charge my batteries. The rest of the time, all the energy is efficient because every single one of my appliances, including my computer systems, which are now be running off of a modified battery backup that would normally come on when the AC power died off. So I'm just running everything I got off of a modified battery backup, and it doesn't matter if the mains power goes off, because now, even if the mains power goes off for several hours or potentially even a day, I still have stored energy waiting for me, and I'm still running right along. I didn't even know the main power went off. I didn't even know it was off for a day or so. You see what I mean?
Yep, I do that. That's a very simple system, too.
Yeah. Think about it. And so using that particular circuit, if you know you can pulse the coils in a transformer, microwave oven transformer, then that means you could also pulse the coils in an electric motor.
Right.
And if it's normally taking you 220 to 240 volts to run a huge motor, but you now know you can run it off at 12 volts, and if it takes you three of them to do it, like on a three-phase electric motor, then you got three of these circuits. So maximum, you got 3 amps that you're pulling to run a doggone 220 to 240 volt electric motor. What do you think?
I think you're right.
Because like I said, those coils don't care where the field comes from.
No, they don't.
You know?
See,
Patty said, yeah, if you don't watch where you touch, you will get a new hairdo like Shaziz. Laugh out loud. That's true. Do you want a hairstyle like mine? Just come over to my lab and I'll show you what to touch.
There you go.
Yeah.
Oh, Lord. You remember that time we were messing with that X13?
Yeah.
Motor? And I played my arm on the table and accidentally touched it?
Yep.
Boy, woo-wee. I tell you what, this old man moved pretty damn fast then, didn't he?
Oh, yeah. Well, as I told you, never don't learn electrical safety by accident, because you'd be surprised. Man, that X13 puts out a lot of power. And here's another thing about what I'm saying right here, is I was always looking for driver circuits for those as well. Well, I believe these driver circuits would be more than enough to actually run the actual circuitry that is the driver circuit.
Right.
So instead of having to have that thing, you know, run off of the regular the mains output, you could actually set this thing up to be the inverter that would run it by itself without any modifications to those X13s or washing machine motors.
Right.
Anyway, I hope that some of what I'm saying to everybody out there makes sense, because I'm pretty excited about these little circuits. And I'm doing a lot of tests, and I need to do an updated video to the driver video that I just posted in there, coil driver, because if you put AC capacitor on the output side of that, you'll get that, it'll smooth that signal out, and you can run that electric motor right directly off of it without that relay tripping on it. And that's what I was trying to show in the video, that you could do that, but I didn't have the capacitor in there at that particular time, so I'll have to do an updated video and show everybody. Because the key is to get that energy away from that transformer. That's it.
Hey, can you do me a favor?
Yeah.
Can you post the URL, the link to the URL in the chat room so I can watch that video?
Oh, yeah. Hold on. Let me...
After the show. I'll watch the video after the show.
Yeah, let me... I'll get it right now.
That would be very interesting too for a lot of people. That way they don't have to look for it.
Yeah, I already posted it in the chat room.
Right.
I'll post it in Skype. I meant to do that earlier for you. But, yeah, watch this video.
But I would really like to play with this circuit.
And if you're listening in on the on this show right now, remember there's going to be an update to this video because... I'm going to put it in the wrong deal. It's going to be an update to this video because... And blast it. My keyboard acting up down there. Ah! Alright. Because I realized that you can actually use a capacitor on the output side of the same system in order to get that energy smoothed out so that it runs the electric motor direct. There we go. Now everything's working again.
Where would you put the capacitor? Between the batteries and the circuit, or after the circuit?
On the high voltage side, of the transformer, you have the high voltage output, then you put your capacitor, and then you, on the other side of the capacitor, you run to your electric motor, and then on the other wire from your electric motor, you run right directly to the core of the transformer, and it will run direct.
Right.
Off of high voltage.
Kick butt.
So, I'm going to have to rewatch that video, and then today probably do another update to that video, because I need to make sure that people see that can be done.
All right, that circuit says 14 to 12 volts DC
yep.
to 220 volts AC, but now is that... 220 volt AC European or American?
Probably European.
I think it is.
I don't know.
You're right.
But either way, the 220 volts AC, I believe, is that it has each side with a midpoint on there.
Okay.
And so it's kind of like the way you'd wire up three phase.
All right.
But I'm just running it off of one leg, one side.
Okay.
And I point out in the video the two that I'm running it off of. And so by running it like that, it's not allowing any power to feed back into that circuit, which is making it more efficient because it's still putting out the frequency needed to pulse the primary, but it's not allowing the transistors to draw too much current and get hot.
Gotcha.
And as long as they ain't getting hot.
It's a far more efficient way to use the electricity.
Yeah.
Because you're not losing a lot of the electricity in heat.
Yeah, that's the whole key.
Again, like you said, it doesn't make any sound, so it's not vibrating, so you're not losing any energy that way either. So it is more efficient.
Yep.
And you're not creating more energy than you're using. You're just using all the energy that you're using. You're not throwing any of it away.
Yep.
It's by far more efficient.
So I'm hoping that a bunch of other researchers out there besides me take up these circuits and take a peek at them, because they're worthy of looking into, because I believe that you could actually take a permanent magnet generator head, any generator head out there.
Do you realize how much more efficient it would make an air conditioner or a refrigerator?
Probably a heck of a lot.
Your air conditioning and your refrigeration in your home is, those two items alone consume over 40% of the electricity you actually use. And with this circuit, if you wired it right, I mean, it would drop that drastically.
Yeah. Well,
this would save somebody a lot of money in a year's time.
I'm thinking you could take this this circuit right here, and you could take a generator head that was normally connected to a gas motor that had permanent magnets designed in the rotor or whatever.
Right.
And you could pulse the primary in that and be able to replicate what the magnets would have been doing, but with just that circuit alone, energize those coils and produce electricity out of the secondaries.
And put on a vapor carburetor, and oh my gosh, you'd burn $5 worth of gasoline a week and run your whole entire household and maybe half of your neighbor's house.
Huh. There's so many possibilities.
Yes, it is.
Basically, just doing more for less input is going to raise the efficiency up.
Yep.
And you're not violating any of the laws of physics doing this, folks.
Right, that's the beautiful part.
It's basically that. Like I said, those transformers, they don't care where that magnetic field comes from. And at the frequency that these particular circuits are, and one of the good things about this particular circuit is there's a little blue deal on the side of that you can adjust the frequency up and down. So you even have room to play in order to get that frequency to wherever you want it to be. So I don't know at what hertz range it's actually running at right now, but the way it was preset whenever I got it and running it off of two legs, the frequency is it's not only making the transformer run cool, but the transistors are running cool. And so it tells me it's not drawing too much current. And when it draws too much current, there's where the amperage and all that gets involved, and then the too much current basically generates the heat. And if you're, on the output side of it trying to pull power off of that, and it's feeding back to the same system, it's causing it to be under a load, which is then in turn causing it to draw too much, try to push it out more. That's why I'm saying you got to take that energy away from that transformer. That's the key. And one of the ways to take it away from that transformer is with what I've been talking about, the plasma reactor that I want to build. And I want to build one with all the different noble gases. I want to build one model for each noble gas to see which ones produced the most lumens, which one produced the most heat, and so on down the line. So by running it through that doggone that high voltage through that neon bulb on the other side, I'm actually getting rectified DC on the other side. Well, if you reach down and grab a hold of those bulbs while they're energized, they get really hot. So that means if I built the plasma water heater that I was talking about, that neon would be a really good one. It's an orange glow that you get off of there, but that neon produces a lot of heat, and so you could transfer that heat away from the high voltage transformer in the form of heat, which would normally be waste energy, and then transfer that heat energy back into electrical current, therefore not invoking the lens effect that would cause that transformer to have to work harder. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
So, I've seen that Peltier elements under the right circumstances can produce at least 3 volts apiece, and you can run them in series, and so, you know, 3 volts times 3 is 9 volts, and you can run things off of 9 volts, and so throw another one in there, you're up to 12 volts now. You could turn around and run another circuit off of 4 Peltier elements that would pulse another coil. What do you think of that?
I like it. I really do.
So if I'm transferring the heat away, and the heat's going through copper tubing, it's also heating water, and I'm getting the water up to 160 or 180 degrees Fahrenheit, and that's more than enough temperature to get those Peltier elements to produce 3 volts apiece, and I run these Peltier elements in series with each other, and I'm up to 12 volts apiece with... I only need less than one amp in order to be able to run that circuit, and so it's probably way less than one amp. But nonetheless, we know that this battery charger that I ran it off of, it's only a one amp battery charger. So anything above that, that thing will kick off. Alright, well, so I know it's under one amp. So if all I need is one amp generated, I can get the one amp from those Peltier elements. And if for some reason that I can't get enough to produce one amp, they have step-up boost converters that were DC to DC boost converters that I can put the power that's coming out of the Peltier element into and basically store it into a capacitor by sending the energy one direction only and charging that capacitor up and being able to do the same thing that I did off of this system over here and use the capacitor to be able to store the power to run that doggone electric motor constant without causing that relay to kick. So the means is there. The technology is available. We can take and change the energy from high voltage into plasma, which is generating heat, which is producing a DC rectified current out the other side, and we can take that heat and move that heat energy to something else and use that heat energy to produce electricity again and therefore not invoke the lens effect on that transformer, which means that transformer won't work, get hot and work harder, and it also means that transformer won't ask more of that circuit than it's capable of, therefore the transistors won't be drawing too much current from the power source. That makes that battery more efficient, it makes the circuit more efficient, makes the transformer more efficient, and it gives you the energy you need to run whatever it is you need to run without all the hassles.
Right.
I got it figured out, Raymond.
Yep. Sounds to me like you do.
Now all we got to do, what Steven said, Steven... Oh... Yeah, that's a hairdo. Alright, well, never mind. I was looking at a picture in the deal whenever Patty mentioned about, let's see, she said, I no touch, not gonna do it, nope. And Steven said, don't blame you, Patty, although I would like to see you with Shaziz's hair, you couldn't tell where the feathers start and your hair ends. Anyway, there's a picture that he posted in the chat room of a nifty hairstyle for Patty. Mad science cool. Hair.
Yeah, Steve is cool.
Yeah, you can always tell somebody's brilliance by their hair.
Right.
See, go look at Einstein. He had jacked up hair. Alright, so anyway, the whole deal is trying to get it to the maximum efficiency, and transformers is one of the things that are least efficient in the process of how we do it. Electric motors are essentially transformers, because if you look how a electric motor is designed, you got a stator that is built with laminates or in some cases ferrite, different styles of cores. And you're basically energizing a primary, which then in turn energizes a secondary, and these fields interact with coils that are on the magnetic rotor that are also wrapped around cores as well. So now we know how the dang electric motors work like transformers. Now we know we can pulse an electric motor direct without plugging it into the wall. You just plug right straight into the windings. So there you go, man. Anyway, it's not that we don't have enough power, it's that we've been using it improperly. And if we're going to continue to use it improperly, at least we should do is recover any waste energy that is produced in the process of using it improperly, which would increase the efficiency. So imagine me running my electric fan to stay cool, and using the transformer inside the electric fan to actually heat water to add to my hot water system in my house, so that while I'm running the inefficient electric fan, that waste heat is not being lost. It's actually being transferred over to supplement my hot water heater. Now I have a more efficient hot water heater because it don't have to kick on as much. What do you think, Raymond?
I like it. I really like the idea. I love the concept.
Well, if we could get that to be a more of a standard way of thought out there in this world, when you start to buy appliances, you find like appliances that have a secondary use for them.
Right.
That means I go out and buy me an electric motor, and this electric motor doesn't just turn whatever it is I want it to turn. It actually is a water heater as well. And it's using the eddy currents that are generating heat, which are normally wasted in an electric motor, to actually transfer that wasted heat to the water that fills up my hot water tank. And the side effect of it is it makes that electric motor more efficient, because now the electric motor doesn't get hot and reaches thermal breakdown that causes the insulation on the electric motor to fail. So my electric motor is going to last longer. I'm going to get hot water for the same electricity that I'm running. Phew. Yeah. Do you know there's a little tiny circuit out there that you can hook an LED to this circuit, and when you push the button down to put power to the coil, one LED will light up, but the other one will not. When you release the button to energize the coil, when that magnetic field collapses, the other LED lights up, and the other one will not. When you hook it to an AC source that is continuously flashing back and forth, now one LED will light up, then the other LED will light up. Every time that field changes, those LEDs will light back up. So that tells me that if you got an energy source that you're using that is pulsing back and forth, it's going to pulse back and forth as long as you're running it. So why not monopolize on that back and forth deal? And when it's on this side, it's charging this thing up, and when it's on that side, it's charging that thing up back and forth. You see what I mean? That changing magnetic field is all any transformer's looking for. So you could get one transformer to do the job of three transformers just because of what it's doing. What do you think?
Yep, I like it.
And the current's going to flow through it either way, and it's going to keep changing back and forth. And so What if you have 100 AC transformers in series with whatever it is that you're running? Like, I got one, light bulb, and this would be really easy to test. I got one light bulb, and I got one long cord that has 50 AC transformers on one side and 50 AC transformers on the other side. Now, the only thing these transformers are looking for is a change in field. As that AC current's going back and forth through that line, that's the changing field that it's looking for. It don't care that you're running that light down at the other end. All it cares is that these fields are changing back and forth, which is inducing the current into the core, which is going transferred over to the secondary. So you should be able to pull power off of those secondaries without ever interfering with that light bulb.
Right.
And it wouldn't be drawing any more power than it was before. Because all it's trying to do, it's looking for changes in fields. It don't care about what you're doing down the road. You know? And the only transformer that would be affected is whichever transformer you tap off of. The transformer, you know, might get a little warm from eddy currents being generated while you're trying to drag stuff off, but nonetheless, it's still not changing the fact that it's already in series with that light bulb down at the other end. Does that make any sense?
Yeah.
So that power is just, it's passing through underneath, and as it's passing back and forth, it's producing a wave, and that wave is the change in polarity that the secondary is looking for. I'm going to have to do an experiment and try it. Imagine that. If you could build a transformer that simple. Got any ideas? Other than answering
the phone?
I've
got a call coming in.
Alright. So anyway, basically, the first three videos that I posted were to show you that there are losses in transformers. And it doesn't matter which size these transformers are, from the largest transformer out there on the pole to the substations all the way around your neighborhoods that have transformers, to all the little transformers that you use in your house. Transformers are not 100% efficient. They have leakage from flux. They have waste energy from heat generated by eddy currents, and they actually have vibrations which are making sound that is also a form of wasted energy. And so now that you know you have all these different forms of wasted energy with a transformer, but you still need to be able to use the transformer to either step up or step down the power output, then you know you can monopolize on those wasted energies and find another use for them. And if you know, get the right crew together, we can actually build really perfectly efficient transformers where there are no losses in the system. So you get what you need out the other side. All you're doing is moving it down. Anytime you use any kind of energy, don't matter what kind of energy, energy is going to generate heat. No matter what type of energy it is, once work's being done, you got friction or whatever that's going to cause things to get warmer. Just by moving the electrons back and forth, you're causing friction, which is going to cause them to get warmer. So that's one of the byproducts of using energy. Well, I figure if it's going to be a byproduct anyway, then might as well use it. You know, to some extent, it's already been done. Because in your automobile, when you're driving your car during the winter time, you have to use that heat that your motor generates by circulating water from the cooling system in through your heater core. And that's how you keep warm in the winter time. But most of you out there who drive vehicles or ever rode in a vehicle know that the heating systems in some vehicles will literally run you out of there because they're producing too much heat. So you got to roll down the window with the heater on because it's either too hot or too cold. Turn it off, it gets cold really fast, and turn it on, it gets too hot. Can't breathe up in there. So that tells you that engine's putting out a lot of wasted heat. If it's able to do that, And if you want to do to specifically engineer an engine to take and use that heat, imagine what you could do with it. The average vehicle runs, water temperature-wise, anywhere from 160 to 180 to 220 degrees Fahrenheit. Anything above that, and now your engine's getting too hot. But that means to say that that engine, it was probably originally a lot hotter than that. And so if you monopolized on that that engine, the heat that engine's actually making, who's to say you couldn't actually build a combination hybrid gasoline/steam engine where you intentionally get that engine hot, not hot enough to destroy the engine or cause a thermal breakdown, but to actually take that heat, generate steam, which in turn generates pressure that you can send into turbines that will assist your transmission on down the road. So you could boil water while you're going down the road and have a steam combination steam engine / gasoline engine, and until the steam pressure wears down, you wouldn't need the engine. So the engine wouldn't have to be working hard. You could supplement how much fuel you actually had to use. There's so many different ways by which we could modify and re-engineer the equipment that we run these days. It's ridiculous. Here at ShazoozRadio.com, that's what we talk about. All kinds of alternative energy ideas. Stephen Gibbons has a button up there above the radio player in the Shazoo's Radio chat room. It says Stephen's resource page. Click on that and you'll find links to all kinds of research. In all different directions, groups out there, individuals in alternative energy research, and so, you know, their YouTube channels, their websites, and it just, it's an amazing job he did on this deal. And so, you know, with that said, if you need a list of links, if you need a list of resources, this is the page to get, right there. Pass it on to your you know, all your social medias and your friends and stuff out there where people know where this is available and they have access to all different alternative energy researches and stuff. And then they can come back here and say they found it on Shazoo's Radio or whatever and share more research with us, and we'll post you out even more links. So there you go, folks. So, I think I lost Raymond. He had an important phone call. Probably something, you know, out there. Something really important. Anyway, so, transformers, efficiency, no losses. If you get wasted energy anyway, and you're going to be, by whatever process, generating this waste energy, then it's only a loss if you don't use it. And if you re-engineer a lot of the different machinery that you got, electric motors and all that, everything that is generated by that electric motor is being used. You know, the heat of the friction, of the bearing spinning, or whatever, you know. You keep those things cool, you keep them past their before their thermal breakdown point, and those bearings will never fail. The viscosity of the grease or the oil that is lubricating them won't ever fail. As long as it never reaches that breakdown temperature, then you got things that will last forever. So you'll be able to modify any existing equipment right now if you have an understanding of how it's functioning and where the weaknesses are in there. You know where to protect it at. It's as simple as that. Can't get more simpler than that. But I'm thinking that if we can get the right people on board to wanting to make all this stuff a reality, we can do it. You know, a lot of times what kills the whole research community is people's egos. They want to think that they are the smartest person in the group. They want that recognition for being the most intelligent individual and the one with all the answers, and they will argue with you till they're blue in the face, some of which will argue the laws of physics with you, and no matter what you say, it's not possible, because the second law of this or that or whatever says that you can't do this because you got too many losses. Well, I just explained to you how to take those losses and make them a plus. And that's what I do. I look at things and I figure out ways to make them better. I look at existing technology and figure out ways to reuse it for this or that to make things more efficient. Get you that much closer to, if at the very least we become super efficient and we can all be able to afford the energy, and if we have a better understanding of how we're using the energy and we're using it properly as opposed to the way it's been used, then you're using less energy and your appliances are lasting longer because you're not tearing them up with too much current, not tearing them up with too much heat. That's the whole key. If you look at everything, the reason why everything out there fails, it gets too hot. The friction tears it up. And to understand where the weakest point is and the thermal breakdown of the particular material, where the weakest point is, then you know where you got to be at. If this thing has to stay under 300 degrees because its weakest point is 300 degrees, then if you can't stay under 300 degrees, then you ain't paid attention to mad science. Because basic physics and basic science will show you how to transfer heat energy away from something and use it for something completely different. You know, basically getting more for the same work. That's all I'm talking about. Any trying to violate any known laws of physics, I'm talking about taking the laws of physics and using them to my advantage. And when you get people out there that, you know, overlook the simple, such as, I can't remember which video, you know, let me look on my deal there. Can't remember which video it was that I did. I can remember which one it was. I just got to get back there because I clicked on that. Error! Yikes. That's going to play before I get it to change over. There it goes. All right. Now, I put a video out called Pressure, and 15 people liked it and 4 people thumbed it down. I got a good idea, the 4 people that thumbed it down, but nonetheless, it doesn't matter. It's not about the thumbs down thing. It's the ones that thumbed it down that I feel sorry for, because they didn't understand what it was that I was trying to point out to them. And if they'd understood what it was I was trying to point out to, they'd figured out that the other deals that I'm talking about high voltage and pressure and whatever, they just want to mince terminology, and if I don't say it the way the school book says it, they don't like it, so they thumb down the video. Some people just subscribe to me because they don't like me and they thumb my video down. I don't care. You know, whatever. But they're cheating themselves out of seeing something in a different way, thinking outside the box. And that's frustrating. But this last video that I put out there, Coil Driver, I need to make an update of it because I did a few things I figured out since then. And so I'll probably try to do that today. If everything works out, I'll try to get another video out of that today. But nonetheless, all these things that I keep showing are little pieces of the puzzle, the anomalies that when you realize how... It's an understanding of how things actually work, how energy actually travels. Forget all the doggone high-tech terminology. That's just, that ain't doing nothing more than getting a bunch of people arguing and, you know, that give that guy that thinks he's really smart opportunity to try to, oh, I'm the most brilliant one in the room. No, you're actually the most ignorant one in the room because you're not willing to pay attention to what it is that's being said. If you see what's going on, and you have an understanding of how something's actually functioning, where its weaknesses are, then you can find out better ways to make it more efficient. This is what I've been trying to point out. But you get these guys that want to argue about the laws of physics over something that isn't even remotely related to what you're trying to talk about. And I find this in my own circles all the time, because people are like, oh, no, I understand. No, I say, no, you don't understand. And I reach down and I grab a hold of these two wires and I say, oh, I'm not getting shocked here. I got my fingers right dead on the primary of this transformer and I am not getting shocked. Which tells me that that coil is being pulsed by the frequency that is being generated from the transistors. And it's not taking a lot of voltage to do it. And then I reach down to put my finger on the transistor and I say, these transistors aren't even hot. They could get by without even having doggone heat sinks on them. And so that tells me that this ain't drawing too much current from either the transformer or the doggone power supply. But on the other side, I wouldn't dare again touch those two wires because the last time I did, it hurt like heck. So I'm synthetically creating a magnetic field using transistor technology that is pulsing that thing, producing a magnetic field and a change in current that is enough that energizes the secondary through that core and produces high voltage on not one but two microwave oven transformers. And those microwave oven transformers are wound to about 2,000 volts apiece. So there's about 4,000 volts, give or take. There's about 4,000 volts coming out the other side. And when you see that I actually run a doggone electric motor off of that, high voltage, and then I will do another video where I show with the same circuit, but this time with a capacitor involved, and you'll see that it smooths out that signal on the other side and runs that doggone deal without ever causing the relay on the transformer to kick on and off. And the only reason why that relay is kicking on and off is because it's either drawing too much power or too much power speeding back to it. That's why it's causing it to kick on and off. So it's a more efficient circuit. It's an easier way to pulse transformers. Coils of any type, you could take any electric motor and turn it into a transformer. I believe you could actually drive large motors with the same circuit. And so it opens up the door for a lot of research if people are willing to take the time to do so. So I'm pretty amazed by it. And I hope that whoever's listening to this show right now, I hope that you take that and give it a shot, you know. Do some research with it, test it out, see what you find, and then if you can find a way to take the energy away from the transformer so that that transformer is not producing a second field that's causing the transformer to have to work harder, then you'll understand what it is I'm trying to say. And once you do that, then you'll have better efficiency for whatever it is that you're trying to run. And that means that you're going to get more work out for less input. And once again, for those skeptics out there, those folks that always want to give me a rash, we're not talking about getting out more than you're putting in. Regardless of the voltage amount is way more than you're putting in. We're not talking about getting out more energy than you're putting in. We're talking about using that energy so much more efficient, getting more work done for less input is the key. So I hope that even the most brilliant out there are smart enough to get that. That's just... Alright, well, I was looking... There it is. I was looking for something there. Anyway, folks. Stephen said, I wonder what would happen if we put a transformer inside a capacitor. Would it build up a charge? That's what the power company does. If the transformer's out there on the pole... are actually, if you go watch how they're actually built, they take a sheet layer of aluminum, a piece of paper, and then another sheet layer of aluminum, and then they wrap a big old, essentially a capacitor around a wooden square block, and then they start winding the primaries and the secondaries right around that in between each layer of wire. They have another sheet of paper that basically has non-conductive stuff inside of it. So it's a capacitor and it's a step down transformer all in one shot, and then it's all submersed in oil, and then you have exactly what you're talking about. So if you go look up how they actually make the transformers that are on your I'll have to find that video link. It's in my
Hey Doc, this is it.
Never mind that.
Why, that's me! Look at me! I'm an old man!
Hey, I'm Dr. Emmett Brown. I'm standing here on the parking lot at...
Thank God, I still got my hair! But what on earth is this thing I'm wearing?
Well, this is a radiation suit.
Radiation suit? Of course. Because of all the fallout from the atomic wars. This is truly amazing. A portable television studio. No wonder your president has to be an actor. He's got to look good on television.
Whoa, this is it. This is the part coming up, Doc.
No. This sucker's electrical. But I need a nuclear reaction to generate the 1.21 gigawatts of electricity.
What did I just say?
Flux capacitor stores. This sucker's electrical. But I need a nuclear reaction to generate the 1.21 gigawatts of electricity.
1.21 gigawatts! 1.21 gigawatts!
What the hell is a gigawatt?
How could I have been so careless? 1.21 gigawatts? Tom, how am I going to generate that kind of power? It can't be done, can it?
Look, all we need is a little plutonium.
Oh, I'm sure that in 1985, plutonium was available in every corner drugstore, but in 1955, it's a little hard to come by. Marty, I'm sorry, but I'm afraid you're stuck here.
Whoa, Doc, stuck here? I can't be stuck here. I got a wife in 1985. I got a girl.
Is she pretty?
Oh, she's beautiful. She's crazy about me. Look at this. Look what you wrote here, Doc. I mean, that says it all. Doc, you're my only hope.
Marty, I'm sorry, but the only power source capable of generating 1.21 gigawatts of electricity is a bolt of lightning.
What did you say?
A bolt of lightning. Unfortunately, you never know when or where it's ever going to strike.
We do now.
This is it. This is the answer. It says here that a bolt of lightning is going to strike the clock tower precisely 10:04 p.m. next Saturday night. If we could somehow harness this lightning, channel it into the flux capacitor, it just might work. Next Saturday night, we're sending you back to the future!
Of the Starship Enterprise, its continuing mission to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap.
Ah! Ah! Ah!
Operator, give me the number for 911.
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch.